Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's good, internet? It is Austin Walker. I'm coming to you live from the Brick House. It is January 9th. That adds up. I think that adds up. People in this room are nodding at me.
Do we have to do math to figure that part out?
Okay, it was the 6th on Friday. Plus 3, it's 9. January 9th. Joining me, Patrick Klepek, on this beautiful January 9th. It snowed a lot.
Did it? Oh, really? What does a lot mean?
No, it didn't snow a lot. It snowed enough to, like, ruin the lives of people I care about.
That's apocalyptic tones.
Well, just like in that it like canceled flights and stuff. Our friend, our coworker, Danica, was supposed to go home this week. And if you saw on her Twitter account, it has been apocalyptic.
She was trying to go to West Coast, right? Which had equally apocalyptic rainstorms, weirdly enough.
Right. So it was like East Coast, West Coast beef situation.
We got storms. You got storms.
Yeah, blizzards. Yeah, exactly. Storms all over. So it was one of those situations where it was just bad. It was just not good. And so that's my week has been watching people on the internet be like, man, this weather is not good. The wildest thing for me is like it was freezing today. Not freezing. Again, you're in Chicago, so I know it's worse there.
Exactly.
But it was like 15 degrees this morning or something, which isn't like that cold, but it's pretty cold when it was just 40 the other day. And then Thursday it's supposed to be 61 degrees, which is like whiplash shit. And like that's not cool weather. Like pick a direction. Just commit.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the I'm a fan of it in the moment of like the random like 40, 50, 60 degree day. It's like I can like go for a run outside or something. My dog is not miserable when it needs to go to the bathroom. Like, there's a lot of great things that happen. But then it's like
absolutely
2 days later when it's like 6 degrees out and it's beginning to snow again. I'd rather just stayed miserable, like learn to coexist with my awful nature and be upset about it rather than like getting my spirits up and believing that there might be hope for my future.
That tomorrow would be better.
Yeah, right. Tomorrow is not going to be a better day. It's equally bad.
It's going to be. Right. It's going to still be January. This is the thing I thought about recently was like, you know how we think about – okay, so – So
yep.
You know like it gets to be the first day of winter is the longest night, right? Like that is the day – that is the point at which the sun sets the earliest. That's correct? Am I wrong about that? I believe that's correct.
I'm willing to let you believe it.
And so in my head as a kid growing up, I always convinced myself of this narrative that was like, oh, well, today it's pretty dark. It's the darkest it's going to get all year.
Yeah.
That means tomorrow, like, things are going to start getting – we're going to start pushing back the other direction. Like, we're going – it's all, like, downhill or uphill, like, good. But it's all good from here, like, depending on how you want to read that metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I've realized since then is that is not true. That's false because – It's not like the next day is like warmer and then that's like good. Like if the sun is out a little bit longer, like it's good that it's a little bit longer, but it's also another day in a row of the sun basically not existing. And so like every day is still worse for a while. You get like another month or two, and that's how the climate and the seasons work, Patrick. I figured it out. I'm 31 years old. I finally put two and two together and understand now that things don't actually get better immediately after the sun has been gone for a long time. It takes another couple of weeks. Realizations here on Waypoint Radio.
Yeah, man. 2017, it's a year we're going to be introspective. We're gonna have to learn, have to listen, and we're also going to understand the weather better.
One thing at a time. You know, I see that's your version of the Meryl Streep speech from last night.
Yeah, exactly.
You've gotta learn the weather,
listen, and understand the weather better, and fuck Trump, like something like that, like some weird
combination
order of those
things. How are you doing? How was your weekend?
Well, I mean, weekend was fine, except I started noticing around Sunday afternoon that my normally bubbly-faced daughter was with, like, less bubbles, more bad faces, and I was starting to suspect that in the first 6 months of having a kid in daycare, if it happens early, like it's happening for us, which is, you know, my wife took 2 months off and then went back to work. Some kids experience it when they go to preschool, you know, a couple years into life, depending on how things work out. There's this essentially what our doctor described as a 6 month hell period, which is look, like your kid has no immune system. He needs he or she needs to develop that. So it's just going to be this. And you can't, if you listen to this, you can't see what I'm going to do with my hands, but it's an up or down motion, which is basically you get
a wave. He's doing a wave.
Yeah, you get brief moments where you're not sick and then lots of moments where you are sick. And so.
But it's a good thing, right? Because that means like, that's how they build. Right.
Like 10 years from now, I'll look back, like, I'm glad you got sick early instead of when you're like, you know, several years old and can run around and you did it in preschool. Like, it's, we're in the right position, but it's like the slow realization that like you're getting sick and then. Yeah. I'm going to get sick, and then my wife's going to get sick, and now she would not sleep. So we didn't sleep last night. And then I thought, you know, well, at least the one good thing I did this weekend was put up a dry erase board in my office. Like, I'm going to start writing down, like, the stories I'm working on this week. Just, like, cool. Like, I like things that are physical. I like writing things down in a notebook. And I walk in, and the dry erase board fell off, and it cracked. And I don't know why it did that. Good. I thought I mounted it correctly, but it's all going wrong.
Does this have to do with the circuit hole? Is this the hole in the power?
No, that's the other side of the room. This is just,
okay,
I'm not good at mounting things. That sounds... Hmm.
Was there anything, like, ominous written on the whiteboard when it, like, fell? Or, like, behind it? Was there, like...
I wrote waypoint. That's the only thing on it.
This is like a...
Is that ominous?
It's something. It's something. I want this to be, like, an Amityville Horror situation where it's just, like, you've moved into a really weird haunted house. Just, less blood.
It still says waypoint. I was looking to see if maybe... Some sort of creepy child ghost wrote something else on it. It still says waypoint.
Okay,
which maybe that's the disturbing part, is that the ghost that knocked it down said, "Nah, that's fine. You're good with that."
So speaking of being sick, sadly, Danielle Riendo, our third co-host, is not here today because she is also sick. The winter has taken her from us.
She's sick of the winter.
Today.
She's not actually sick. She just said, "I'm sick of winter. I'm not coming in.
I'm done. I'm gonna fuck around with this snow bullshit." It's tough to be a person.
It is sometimes.
World, sometimes. That's my message for you today. It's tough being a person sometimes.
Like,
the winter doesn't make
that
easier. Cut yourself some slack. Take a day. You know, listen, I took last week off. I'm recuperated. I'm rejuvenated.
Good.
You know what I played this weekend?
What?
The Witcher. I'm keeping up with
It's Witcher Mondays. We've already
Witcher
changed
Mondays.
The feature.
I thought it was Witcher Weekly. It was a
Witcher
Weekly
Wednesdays.
Walker's Witcher Wednesdays Weekly.
Witcher
weekly
Wednesdays
checker.
Now on Mondays.
Now on Mondays. Yeah, Monday's the new Wednesday. So I played some of The Witcher. There's video evidence of that on my Twitter account.
You saw some kids having a fun time.
They were sliding around without any animations, which I think means that they are cursed, or at least accursed. What else? I met a cool troll who was protecting some boats.
The one where you have to get him paint?
That's right.
That's one of the best quests in the game.
Like, he was like, "Oh, you should go give me some paint." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, okay." There's my favorite thing about, so I'm going to spoil this setup for this quest is, like, you meet this troll who's singing in the marshes outside of this little city, and he's like, he's like a nice dude. Like, he presents as like the sort of dude who what would have killed some people, but also is a nice dude and kind of tells
you
that.
You can be both. It's 2017. You can be many things.
You can exactly.
You can have a
heterogeneous world.
You can have a big heart and also have used that heart to maybe crush people with your stone like structure.
Right, exactly. You could have a big heart and a big stomach filled with people. And he basically, like, oh, yeah, he was trying to basically befriend all these people and end up hurting them. And then there's this bit where he's like, wait, what happened to the bodies? You know, and the troll is like, oh, well, I got really hungry. And one of the responses is either like, well, that's dangerous, or like, eh. And I think they're like, eh, like, you're a troll, like, eh. And Geralt's exact line was like, eh, yeah, you know, war times. And I was like, yeah, good. wartime law, I guess. That game is I still there's still things about it that are like make it hard to jump back into, but yes. I'm doing my best to like slowly ease my way back in through side quests. I did stumble into a main quest again by mistake. I'm just like, oh, this looks like a place I could go inside of, and I stepped inside of it, and it was the next main quest, which was like starting to look for Dandelion,
right.
Novigrad, and meeting the little dwarf
dude? Early in that video game.
I know, but I'm like 35 hours in. Also, do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
yes, I'm very early, but also it feels like I've already dumped a ton of time into it.
What I love about what CD Projekt Red does, and this is not a new observation. Though, is that side quest in terms of what you actually do is just a short fetch quest. Mm-hmm. Like you just collect some paint for this dude, and then he can paint these boats so that he can try and get these humans to forgive him for right. eating them and beating right. them to death. But they find a way to package, like it's the way they package things in that game that are like yeah. all the many things that are incredible at The Witcher 3. But it's like they didn't have to write some like funny dialogue and give characterization to this troll. It could have just been like it could have been something very easily.
It could have just been
else.
The human saying we need the red paint to paint our things red. So you know, like
yeah, go get the paint.
They wrote right. They wrote this character who is really funny and charming and who will be gone in 20 minutes of me doing this quest.
Well,
or
and it also like what it does is it implies so much about the world and like the people yeah. around. Like that small side quest gives you like it does world building at in the context of a cheap like fetch quest, but like
right,
it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel cheap in the way a lot of other side quests do, which are just like nakedly, you know, like hey, we're filler, and then you've done it, and you're like, oh crap, I fell for it again.
The thing that's tough there is like that is on one hand, I think that is I have like a lot of thoughts. I'm trying to unwrap them right now, trying to untangle them and like lay them out in an outline format. So. I totally agree with you from the jump. Like, oh yeah, this is an opportunity to talk about trolls and talk about the conflict between the peasants and the Redanians. Like, all that stuff is happening there, which is awesome. But also, I've seen this fall on its – this style of, like, world building fall on its face a lot, right?
Sure.
Like, where a game will try to use a simple quest – as a means of world building or characterization, and in fact, I wanted to get out of my way, and like because the writing isn't that good or the performance isn't that good,
right?
And it's like really hard to know that. Like, as someone who writes stuff and who works in fiction, it can be tough to know when you're not good or like when this specific line of creativity is like not paying off from the inside, right? So it's one of those things where like even as like a tabletop person, like a DM. I can give a quest to my party and be like, oh, like weeks later, like I set that up really poorly. Like I just wasted all their time for 45 minutes. And I think
right.
if I'm playing a game like Borderlands or something like that, sometimes that's how it feels, where it's like, all right, do you want me to kill 12 like skag dogs or whatever those things are called in that game? Just like I don't need the thesis. I don't need to know about like your shitty club or whatever,
right?
Because it's just not that interesting. And it's I guess my question to you is like. What's the sign that it's working, or like, what's the kind of vibe on this with me? Just come and vibe on this with
well,
me.
Well, I think also we run the risk of, and I run this risk too, of like pointing to The Witcher 3 and be like, "More, you should just do more of that," which is to say, like,
right.
CD Projekt Red is like, you know, a top class talent doing something that even if another studio came in and emulated exactly yeah. what they're doing doesn't mean they would pull it off, right? Like, so that side quest, like what I described worked about that. Just because you take that template doesn't mean you're going to do it, which is exactly what you're saying, is that the execution is everything there. And I don't know, like, it's a world I care about, and I say this as someone that like loathes fantasy, like could yeah. not care less about fantasy worlds. And so like The Witcher is already starting at like a place where I'm rolling my eyes, but I buy in to their world in a way that I want to know more about it. Like, I don't want to go full Vinnie Caravella and go read the books, but like, I'm right. pretty close. Like, they've dragged me like pretty far the way there.
We got a story going up on the site today or tomorrow that I think Danielle's in edits for this second. That's about one of the short stories in that world, and it's making me want to like, maybe I could just quickly sneak a short story about The Witcher, and maybe I could. We'll see. yeah, I don't know. Well, the other thing here though is the other game that I'm thinking about jumping back into a little bit is Elite Dangerous, which is a game that I don't want to say it doesn't have world building, because like we spent last Friday talking about this like cool thing that it did with the Thargoid alien species, like, and how that was great world building,
right?
But it is a game that is built to get out of your – not to get out of your way. It has flavor and color in place of – in place of like quest text, right? Like it uses like the dynamic systems to produce an effect that like you understand that the world is complicated and is interacting. That like, oh, there are these people who are trying to smuggle drugs off of this planet, and because of that the empires are clashing in this interesting way over the rights of, you know, drug use versus whatever. Like that stuff is all happening in the game, driven by systems and interpreted by the game's like writing team. But there, when you go to pick up that delivery of narcotics on, you know, Prime Alpha 27, like it doesn't give you this huge long screed about that stuff.
Right.
It just like drops in. And that's a different sort of play that I also really am fond of. I'm just like, hey, let me just chill the fuck out and play this game. Or like that's like the Euro Truck Simulator thing too, right? Let me just turn on some music and play. And I'm curious, like I guess The Witcher also does have that in some regard. That like that sort of like, okay, I'm not going to engage with, or I'm going to play a quest where there isn't a huge amount of dialogue. It's just, I'm going to go get this Witcher gear for the next 30 minutes. And that works really well. I got some Witcher gear also. I got the Griffin set.
I think I wore the Griffin gear for like most of that game.
I wish it looked better, but I'll live with it. Have you been up to anything on your end besides Sick Baby?
No, I mean, unfortunately, the game that I've been playing a lot of, which is the game you've been playing a lot of, Gravity Rush 2, but we can't talk about Gravity Rush 2. I will say that I think we'll have a lot of things to talk about with Gravity Rush 2, which will be fun.
There's stuff that we're going to talk about with Gravity Rush 2 that I'm totally surprised we'll be talking about.
So looking forward to being able to speak to more of that. Later this week, I'm going to be sort of revisiting the remaster of Gravity Rush, which I played Gravity Rush on the Vita back when I had a Vita. I mean, I still have a Vita, but like it feels like I don't because I don't know the last time that I've touched it. And you wanted something substantial to play. And I remember really loving Gravity Rush. Like, not weirdly, I think we came at it on polar opposite ends when, like, we found out we were getting Gravity Rush 2 codes in to play. And I was like, oh, man, like, I really liked that first game. And you were like, yeah, the world is incredible. And I was like, fuck the world. I just like floating around in that game. And you were
I like floating around too, but that world was actually really cool. Like, I liked it. Here's what I like about that game's world, the first game's world. I'm not going to talk about Gravity Rush 2.
Yeah.
This is not there. That embargo is not up for another day. Is that correct?
I don't know. Even if it's today, I don't know. So let's say not.
So the world of Gravity Rush in the game Gravity Rush, a.k.a. Gravity Days, D-A-Z-E, which is a good name.
Yes.
Because it also sounds like days, like the amount of days that you would spend, like, is that it takes a really ridiculous premise and then, like, runs with it all the way to be, like, to where even the appearance of people who can shift time and gravity aren't that big of a deal. And at first I hated this about the Gravity Rush world, where, like, why aren't more people obsessed with the fact that I can float everywhere? Like, why is anyone no-selling me? Like, that game, Gravity Rush 1, opens up with you saving this kid from being, like, sucked into a gravity storm and taken away from his family. And then, like, their house gets fucked up in the process. And the dad is, like, losing his shit on you because you didn't save the house. You only saved the kid. It's like, my dude, I just floated in the sky and saved your kid from an evil, like, dark hand of hell. Just cut me some slack here.
And also, wasn't that cool? Like, that was pretty dope. Like, look what I did. Cool.
Yeah.
Have you seen that before?
And the answer is, like, yeah. Like, yeah. Like, the gravity is fucked up. My house floats all the time. I'm on a... And that is, like, a really fun thing that, like, because the whole world is so fucked up... Like, yes, people are thankful when you save them sometimes, but mostly, like, that's just a thing that happened. Like, that's just a fact about the world, the way that, like, driving is a fact about our world. So, like, yeah, there are roads. Like, I'm really happy that you were a good ambulance driver, but, like, yes, people have cars. Like, I'm going to thank you for saving my life, but not because you floated around or whatever bullshit. And I love that is, like, they take that premise all the way there. You weren't just... It's not just you. The whole world is like that. So I'm excited to talk to you more about Gravity Rush in the future.
Project. Yeah. So supposedly someone in the chat says to the embargo is tomorrow. But we'll probably wait a little longer because the game doesn't actually come out till next week, I don't think. Because I missed the first – I wrote down the other game. I played a ton of games during the week that we had off. I'm trying to think if there's anything notable.
Well, something came out that we wrote about and then never got to talk about.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Frog
Fractions 2 came out.
It's real.
It's which out. We at some point we were approached to learn the secrets of Frog Fractions 2, to sort of know how the ARG was going to end, which I actually like pushed off. Like I kept telling Jim Crawford, the designer, I was like, nah, not yet. He's like, well, we should do an interview because, like, I don't know when this is all going to end, and you should probably, you know, if you want to get a story together. I was like, just like another 2 weeks. So I kept, like, pushing him off, and then finally I kind of felt like we turned a corner in the ARG, and I was like, all right, then. Because I liked, you know, as much as it is fun to know things, like, as I put in my top 10 list for my favorite games of 2016, like, the ARG was one of them. And I was only, like, a minor participatory role in that, and in some ways – consent was not given in me becoming a participant in that ARG, but like covering it, like it became like a game for me, even if I was only just a reporter who was like broadening it out for a larger audience of like what's happening and what's interesting about it. And so that ultimately led to, an actual game, Frog Fractions 2. Well, I guess Glitter Mint and Grove, and then down, which is funny because when we got access to the game, we didn't ask, or I didn't ask, because I could have, like, it was like, well, because Glitter Mint and Grove is a, it's a, what, a base building game, or not a base building game?
They call sort it, of a base building game, a base building game is
you
fun,
play
like
more
a city builder, or like, I played a bunch of, Glitter Mint and Grove just, like, as a thing by itself.
It's so totally, that's the thing, like, it's not a jokey game that Frog Fractions is wrapped in. It's just a legit game. You can just play this for hours.
A fairy village in the woods, and I actually think that I it's not balanced to be good. It's balanced to let you quickly access Frog Fractions 2 once you know where to look for it,
right,
or whatever you want to call that thing. But I think that there are some really cool mechanics in Glitter Mint and Grove. Like you're building all these like fairy houses in the woods, and like you have to attach them and all of the other buildings you're building to a tree, and like you have to be careful of trees overgrowing and like blocking out the sun, which means that they won't be able to grow fast enough. It's like
way more complex
than it has any right to be, you know.
And from what I understand, like the reason that game even exists is because one of Jim Crawford's friends always wanted to build that game, and so
right.
Frog Fractions 2 was his excuse to give him a budget to actually make it, which is just like a super cool aside.
Which is – that's like a cool thing. So then like we're not going to go through like a run by – like a play-by-play of Frog Fractions 2.
Right.
But like then you get into the meat of that game. And for people who didn't play the first Frog Fractions, Frog Fractions 1 was a Flash game. I believe it was Flash, not HTML5. I'm pretty sure it was Flash, in which it dressed itself up like a learning game, like an old school number muncher style thing,
yep,
and then very quickly descended or ascended, depending on your perspective, to a state of surrealist comedy where it was playing with genre. I don't think it played with gender at all.
So
I was trying to run through all the different mini games. I played with genre, and it played with like expectations, and was just really fucking fun.
And it was rapid fire. No jokes stuck around. Like you almost weren't able to process whether a joke was funny because it had moved on to the next one so fast. And like that's part of the
like machine gun style.
Yeah, like it was part of its advantage was just like it just went boom 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 boom, and that's what part of what made it so interesting.
Totally. And so this moves at a much different pace. Like, I think we can talk broadly about this game without specifically talking about what the minigames are. You know, so in your interview with Jim, which went up in the middle of our Waypoint High stuff at the end of the year because we were like, didn't know what the time was.
Yeah, I was going to a holiday party, and like I'm in the car like telling my wife, like, hey, you need to drive because I have to edit this Frog Fractions 2 article that I've been sitting on for 2 months.
Well, I was deaf. We were like waiting for the story to break to hit publish on that thing because like we don't want to break it with this interview. Like it needs to. You and I had conversations which were just like, all right, how do we know when we can hit publish on this? Because we're not just going to ask Jim to be like, yeah, do it. But we need to know that it's like,
yeah. So I had like to pull back the curtain. Like Jim Crawford, the designer on both these games, he was like, hey, I don't quite know. He's like, I would put an embargo on this if like an embargo made sense for a game that is being organically discovered as part of like a 2-year-long ARG. And so, what I told him was like, okay, well, being discovered is not like a guy on Reddit saying I found it or a guy in a Discord chat that's been.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Obsessing right. over Frog Fractions 2 for 2 years, finding it, like, there'll probably just be some moment that it'll make sense. And, like, that moment was Kotaku separately publishing an article that was unrelated to a sort of a backstory, and that was sort of like, okay, like, that scene, you know, pinged Jim and was like, this seems like that's like Kotaku published it, right? Like, we're good. And then the article went up.
So the game itself, the thing to, like, know about it separately, and this is the thing that you get to in this interview, is, like, hey, it's long in a way that Frog Fractions wasn't. And Jim notes, like, that is going to be the thing that he thinks is partially going to be what separates it from the first one in terms of people liking it. That a lot of people who liked Frog Fractions 1 just aren't going to be so fond of Frog Fractions 2. Do you think that held up in your experience?
Well, I think it was actually less the length as much as the actual, like, wrapping of the game.
Sure.
So I think Jim's fear – or not fear, but, like, observation was that he specifically pointed to the Frog Fractions 2 requires, like, puzzle solving and some semblance of skill. Like, it's not a high skill
right.
curve, but, like, it's more of a gamey game than Frog Fractions
which was. Which is just, like, a series of interactive jokes.
Yeah, a series of, like, very basic jokes. Like, once you got Pat, like, once you figured out, like, the trick to start Frog Fractions, the original, which is probably the hardest puzzle in that game, like, you could pretty much get through the rest by just kind of stumbling through it. Whereas Frog Fractions 2, like, some of the mini games are just sort of, like, funny jokes that don't require mm-hmm. you to do a whole lot, but, like, the overworld, like, there is an open world in this game.
There is.
Like, is, like, pretty complex and forces you to really think about what's happening. And it didn't work at all for me, and it forced me to, like, completely bounce off Frog Fractions 2 in a way that I became the person that Jim said, there's going to be a lot of people that loved the first one that aren't going to be able to get into this one.
Right.
And I was totally one of those people where, like, the mini games
yeah.
I adore. Like, I think they're great. They're funny. Somehow he makes, you know, a Flappy Bird joke, like, funny in 2016. Like, that
shouldn't
have been possible.
It's shocking, but really fucking good. There's a lot of jokes that are like, this shouldn't work, but actually this is really fucking good. There's a Dante's Inferno thing that is so choice. That's like a hidden joke inside of the obvious joke.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's a point at which you're going to see, like, a EULA screen, like a licensing thing. Just make sure you scroll all the way down, please. It's my one little mini micro, tiny, you know, nano spoiler. Please scroll down. I think I like the overworld a little bit more because I'm interested in the sort of games that it is drawing inspiration from. It's drawing inspiration from games like ZZT and
which I don't like. Insanity. I to be honest, did not know what ZZT was, and so I think a lot right. of the reason I bounced off of Frog Fractions 2 is like I don't have the nostalgic connection to ZZT, and so
right.
the things that are like frustrating about it are probably nostalgic to people that have a connection to ZZT, whereas I just go. No, like
well,
this
the
isn't
thing,
fun.
The thing that's interesting for me is just like, oh, the thing with the overworld in Frog Fractions 2 in Glittermint and Grove is that it is a reminder that the sort of weirdness of Frog Fractions is not just a surreal turn on old games. It's actually following in a line of games that were outsider art in a sense. They're from an age where that sort of genre bending and that sort of like, hey, now it's an adventure game, now it's an action game, now it's this, existed in this period of time. And like, it isn't just like, ha ha ha, I'm taking these things and mashing them together in weird ways. It's almost a return to form in a way of just like, oh right, we used to take these very basic tools and make them do a bunch of different things in close proximity to each other before we had the genre divisions that we have now.
Right.
And that part is like, really reverential in a way that you don't normally see that sort of reverence next to comedy inside of games especially. And so, like, that was really fucking cool. Like, I think that is smart, but also totally get why you don't like it. There's a thing with a sword that is just, like, a fucking pain in the ass.
Well,
and
yeah. I mean, there was a, like, you know, this game on the PC, so, like,
yes.
I was using a mouse and keyboard, and as it turns out, you really shouldn't do that, and you should use a gamepad, as
Jack Grossman
quickly told us. Like the, and that's part of the reason I bounced off. It was like controlling the sword made me want to jump out a window. But I respect what it is, because like it's one of those games where like I see what it's doing, and I know it's doing it very well. It's just that its reference points make me want to just play the mini games, because my understanding is like it doesn't really have. Like there is some semblance of a through line, like a payoff to all of this, but not one that is necessarily like if you were to remove that, wouldn't you probably still get 95% of the enjoyment of just playing the mini games?
Maybe not 95%. There's a progression that I really like about the overworld. There are points in it in which you get tools that help you navigate it more smoothly, and that was like some of the high points for me. And then it concludes with an overworld puzzle that I think is really fucking good, that I think you would like a lot.
Right.
But is, or maybe you wouldn't like it, but there's an overworld puzzle that puts it in the same category of the style of game that something like Fez or The Witness is.
Oh, interesting.
In terms of like being given tools and then learning how to use those tools.
Right.
And then there's just also moments of like hilarity and chaos and stuff like that throughout the game in that overworld portion that aren't storytelling. And I think I'm with you that I wish – like I can tell you what the story of Frog Fractions 1 is, like, which is ridiculous. But like I can tell you like, oh yeah, you were this frog. And at the end it's like you're the president of Bug Mars. And like yeah, like there's an arc. Glitterman doesn't really have that as far as I've uncovered. But like – and I wish it did. I wish there was a little bit more of that. And I almost wish that there were bits of the ARG in Glittermitten Grove, in Frog Fractions 2, because
you say that as someone that followed the ARG, though, and I think
I
think he made the right choice by not that.
Me too. But it also feels like it's a little bit of a shame to have not figured out how to condense the big picture stuff there into the wrapper, where, like, there is the resistance, there is the, you know, the decay. Like, those are all really potent, like, fictional ideas, as absurd and hilarious and weird as they were, that, like, to not have any of that wrapper there feels... Like, I get it, you're right. Like, you don't want to have to make a game that sends somebody to... They need to go to a huge, you know, 7,000-word-long wiki entry to make sense of. But at the same time, like, The Witcher exists... and references, you know, all this short fiction, all this long-form fiction that I've never read and still like, oh, yeah, here. But basically, he's a guy, he's a witcher, he goes and does this thing. And I think there was stuff in the ARG that was like – but again, the ARG was also kind of put together.
It was it was developed independently.
Yes.
Like, largely outside of Jim Crawford's control. Like, he basically just found smart people he trusted and said, go do a cool thing. And the game was developed separately from that. So, like, I don't think there even existed a world where he could have accomplished those things.
Totally.
And also, like, it's funny because even though I bounced off Frog Fractions 2 and don't particularly care for it, even I respect it, I'm glad that what Jim Crawford made was something that I could bounce off of as opposed to just Frog Fractions 2.0, which was just, like, another rapid-fire joke fest that like took the same exact took the formula of Frog Fractions and just did it again, but then you get that feeling of like, oh right, it's a comedy sequel, and it's, you know, like just all the problems of like following up comedy, which is the reason like you don't usually do it. I'm glad he made something fundamentally different, if similar, but differently enough that he was willing to lose people in the process. Like, I'm gonna respect a designer that is like much more, that is willing to say, I'm going to lose some people, but the people that get this are going to really get it, which was essentially the core of Frog Fractions as well. It had a wider, broader appeal that allowed it to both go viral and just like a regular person could get into it even without picking up a lot of the references. But I totally respect the approach of Frog Fractions 2, which is like, I'm going to make the thing I want to make, and if you don't want to come along for the ride, like, it's cool. And like, I just realized like that's just me, and that's fine.
Right. The thing that's interesting there, too, is just, like, the Kickstarter for this game was basically, hey, trust me, I'm going to make a thing that I really want to make. And if you like Frog Fractions, like, maybe you'll like it, too. Maybe you won't. Like, just give me some cash and we'll see what we can do. And then the other thing there, the other story there is also just, like, and this is something else that you got into in your piece, is, like, that that Kickstarter money only went so far, and that's why this is a game published by Adult Swim, which is maybe the one biggest giveaway of what the game is like, oh, right, it's it looks like it's just like a city builder, like a building sim about fairies, and then also happens to have Sean Baptiste's name from Adult Swim, and it says Adult Swim Publishing there, like,
yeah.
Okay, there might be something here. There might be something here.
Yeah,
so.
And Adult Swim is smart. They would try and go into business with Jim Crawford as soon as possible. I would love if they – I don't know what Jim's going to do after this. Maybe he'll need a break for a while. I guess it depends on how – like, weirdly enough, like, I don't – like, Frog Fractions 2 is a game that actually needs to sell in a way, and I don't know – we'll see how that all turns out. But I would love it if Adult Swim was just, like, working with Jim and allowing him – because I don't know if he can do – I don't know if he can do a secret thing a third time. That's probably pretty tough to pull off. I'd like to see him try, I guess, but I'm curious what Jim Crawford does after this.
Me too. We'll see. We'll see what happens next. I think it is time to go to the old question bucket. If you have a question, you can send it
to gaming@vice.com.
Gaming@vice.com. Use question or questions in the subject header. You can have other things in there also, but it's like question should be first so that it is picked up by my filter and put into the bucket that says podcast question bucket instead of just into the general muck
the other emails. 50 plus pages, right?
I don't even want to talk about it. I actually spent a lot of time on my emails. I have my Vice emails down to like 200 to 300.
That's good. You're in the thousands before, right?
My overall is still like 6,000 when I look at all of my emails. But just Vice is like 200 or 300. It was like 700 or 800 or something.
I have seven
total. Seven total.
I'm a. I don't do inbox zero, but I get really close. It's part of my daily routine.
I used to be inbox zero, and I miss it like desperately.
I have a lot of folders.
Desperately.
A lot of folders. So it's like not really zero because it's like, you know, I'm working on like what, you know, between five and seven stories at any given time.
Sure.
So I just get that stuff doesn't go in my inbox. That just goes in a different folder. So it's like inbox zero. Anyway, inbox tricks.
So, all right, here we go. Okay. Hey, my name is Berke Deviklu from Rua Label Limited in Istanbul, Turkey. We are printed and woven labels for clothing, apparel, garment, and texture manufacturer and seller in Turkey, and we want to work with you about this matter. How can we sell our products to your company? Do you have any production work or any producer or manufacturer in Turkey? I don't think we do, so I'm going to go to the next email here. It's top of the bucket, right? I have to take
it. So wait, that's in the bucket? You just copy and paste that into the bucket? Like you didn't look at it, you just pasted it?
No. I just, listen, on Mondays, I just go right to the source. I don't ever put it in the bucket.
Oh, this is in the email.
It's like,
okay,
this is
right.
From the faucet. I turn on the faucet and the email is coming at me. All right, let's try this one again.
All right.
Okay, next up here. This one, I hope it's real. This is from Cameron in Toronto who says, Hey, hi. You guys have a platform and a variety of perspectives that often place you above the average player of games as far as your audience is concerned. Mm. I don't think we're above, but I understand what you're saying, Cameron. It's easy to forget that y'all are also regular-ass people who have to deal with regular-ass problems with regards to talking about games just on a bigger scale than on message boards. One of the big problems with talking about games in any context is talking about games you enjoy and how that summons the, actually? Say that 12 is your favorite Final Fantasy or that Knights of the Old Republic 2 is your favorite Star Wars game, and in come the, actually brigade to tell you why your favorite thing is bad and you are also bad. And of course they're wrong and you are so right, but the negativity is tiring. My question is, since you guys reach so many people and hear from so many in turn, how do you deal with players trying to deflate your enthusiasm? Are you able to ignore these people, or does it weigh on you? Does having a wider platform affect the way you relate to the experiences you feel passionately about? Past that, thank you for all the good podcasting, listening to Danielle, Austin, Patrick, Danica, and whoever else has been added to the regular rotation since I sent in this email. My day makes my day better every single time a new episode is put out. All of you are doing good work, and I'm happier for it. Thank you so much, Cameron. That means a lot. Yeah, Patrick, I'm sure you face this a lot.
Yeah. I think, you know, if I broaden that out a little bit to you know, like from just Final Fantasy or anything like that, like or sharing an opinion and then getting contrary – I think the thing I struggle with the most is like, you know, whatever, I got 100 and, you know, something thousand followers on Twitter, like I'm sure half of which are robots. but I came from nothing too, right? Like, I, you know, didn't have a following. I was just a writer on the internet, and just things snowballed in a way that they shouldn't have, but somehow I'm here. But like, I've always tried to remember those roots. Like, I like connecting with people. Like, I like talking with individuals. It's part of why I like my job, is like talking to, you know, players that are doing extraordinary things, or design, you know, like all of that is like rooted in like I like to remember and like talking to people. And so like, I don't, my mentions can turn into a real, you know, shitstorm. No matter what you're talking about, you know, whether it's politics or anything, like, it's just the sheer number of people makes it sometimes hard to keep up with. But I like connecting with those people, because like, that's like what I got into this in the first place. And also those people, like, that storm of people are like the reason I get to do what I do. Like, you know, I am not ignorant of the fact that like a following means like I get better considered for jobs and stuff like that, because people think, oh, he's doing a good job. People seem to be following him. But it is so easy then to get, despite the fact that I've done this for as long as I have, that I've tried to get used to the idea of like being, you know, some quasi-celebrity in like a tiny corner of the internet. Like, I still get hung up on like that one guy, right? Like that one person, person who like tries to get under your craw. And I have not found a way to get past that. And so I think that, and I think what he's, you know, what the reader is talking about, this yes, actually, like, that still bothers me. Like, and I have to still kind of pull myself back sometimes in a way that I know I should be above, but it is hard to not.
You grew up in these spaces, and so you have that ready. Like, I don't know. I have that ready for a bunch of reasons. But, like, growing up, whether it was online or in the schoolyard, like, it's like, all right, if you want to have this, we can have this. Like, we can go on why, you know, Tecmo Super Bowl is better than Tecmo Bowl regular. Like, I'll go to the mat with you on that. And I have to remind myself, like, no, actually, that's not – I need to be the bigger person and not get into a, like a drag out fight with everybody. And also, that's just like not how I feel anymore. That like, I get why people don't like Dark Souls 2 as much as me, or KOTOR 2 as much as me, or Metal Gear Solid 2 as much as me, or Mass Effect 3 as much. Like, I understand that I have very unpopular opinions about a handful of games. And when someone uses me saying that as an opportunity to say, there's two types of questions that come, right? There's one is, I think, maybe misguided but good-hearted, which is, can you explain to me why you like that? And there can be value in that conversation, because anytime someone thoughtfully explains what their taste is can be an opportunity for connection and for understanding the medium and for uncovering something that you didn't see yourself in the work. Or even as someone who likes something, having the opportunity to talk about why I like a thing I like can help me find why I like things generally. So that's useful. But there's also the other type of person who says, like, defend that. Tell me, like, not just, hey, can you explain why you like that? But, like, you know, based on what I know about you, you shouldn't like that thing, right? Like, this is the guy who was at a party with me once when I was in college and was like, you know, based on what everybody likes in the Star Wars movies, everyone should love the prequels. Like, everyone just wanted more lightsaber battles. And it's like, is that what we wanted? Like, is that really what – let's start with the premises here,
homie. I mean, like, seven-year-old me?
I didn't, like, sign up.
Probably.
Right. And so, you know, my reactions to these things end up being, like, one of two things, which is because I run into so many of those latter, I kind of don't engage in the former either anymore. And that sucks. But it's not just, like, a time thing. But, like, I don't necessarily love I get a lot of people who just say, like, hey, have you written about blank? Have you written about why you like Dark Souls 2? And part of me, like, wants to never write about why I like Dark Souls 2. Like, I never want to have to write the apologia of my taste. I want to use that taste to fuel writing other things.
Well, because, the reasons you like Dark Souls 2 fuel you to write about games that explain why you like Dark Souls 2, as opposed to stepping into writing, like, my defense of Dark Souls 2. Like, it's just a hornet's nest.
Right.
Like, it's not – yeah.
You already lost. Anytime you set up with, like – this is my life – hot tip, life lesson. Like, the second you frame some shit as a defense, you already lost that conversation, because – You've already set up the premises in which you need to be on the defense, right? You've already set the terms of loss for yourself. If you instead, like, and obviously there are times at which you should engage in debates in which you aren't sure about the right or wrong of what you say, and like, there are times when loss is an acceptable thing in a debate, obviously, blah blah blah. But when it comes to, like, hey, I like this thing, I'm being honest about my enjoyment of it. And I don't want that part to come under contestion. Like, why set that up as like, oh, right, you're right, I'm wrong, I didn't like my time with that thing. Like, no, that is not on the table. Instead, like, engage with why you like a thing. And sometimes you like a thing for shitty reasons, and sometimes you like a thing despite it being shitty, and engage with all of that stuff. But the second I'm in a conversation where the two sides are like, oh, I'm right to like it, or I'm wrong to have liked it, or I'm wrong and I, in fact, somehow never liked it, like, that's just not a conversation that's productive for anybody. Like, that's just not a good – that's just not good at all. It's why –
this is – oh, man. Okay, so this is a tangent. This is the explanation for Prometheus. Like it's like,
right. There are, yes.
I find myself and I have to tell myself to not get dragged into like that movie. And this is like happens for all these different types of arguments that are in games or in other, all sorts of things we like and dislike. It's like, people were just fucking mean to that. And I was like, it doesn't deserve it. Like, I'm not, it's not the best movie. I don't want to be the guy, but you're forcing me to be the guy because you're being right. An asshole.
Why you gotta be an asshole? Just let me have an, like, okay time. Stop talking about how she was running, like, straight ahead instead of to the side. She doesn't know. There's a big thing coming for her. That's the
exactly.
thing. That's the thing.
Exactly.
That's the thing that you're gonna get stuck on? Fuck. God damn.
It's fine.
Prometheus is all right.
It's okay. It's pretty and it's fine. It's not the worst movie ever made.
It's very pretty. Idris Elba was on that ship... on Christmas. He didn't want to be on that ship on Christmas. Give that guy a break. God damn.
The black goo wasn't that good.
This. No. Yeah. Listen, of course. Of course. It has problems. I'm not saying it's. I'm not saying it doesn't have problems.
A lot of this stuff is, you know, the internet, especially when you're talking about like Twitter and message boards, like things are such a. This is crass, a dick measuring contest where it's like people. The only way for people to get attention yes. is to hyperbolize their opinion. And so the way this yeah. is true of like people who are trying to get a reaction out of like someone like you or I, where they hyperbolize their opinion because they think it's the only way to get noticed. And then often when you confront them about that opinion or ask them why they framed it in that way, they will immediately back off because they realize you're actually, you know, the eye of Sauron has shifted to them. And this happens in message boards too. When you like, when you throw in a bunch of people, anonymous who are sharing opinions, like you tend to like, people create – the reason you're participating in the discussion is hopefully that someone will respond. And so that is naturally going to create a tendency for people to exaggerate their opinions in order to get noticed. Yeah. So they may have a point to make, but they make that point like 1,000 times hyperbolized just in the hopes that someone will agree or disagree with them. And that just continues going. Like that – you know, it explains a lot of the bad parts of the internet when you have people sharing opinions and the only way to get noticed is to shout louder. And so it's –
it
yeah.
Sure does. Yeah, well, we could keep going on this, but again, we have this.
Stay
this
tuned
room
for our Alien Covenant spoiler
second.
Cast discussion later this year.
Oh, fuck, we should. I mean, we should.
I think we should. I think there needs to be a one-off podcast where we talk about Prometheus and Alien Covenant, and we should get this out in the open. And then at the end, we'll talk about Dark Souls 2.
We'll just sneak it all out.
All
right
of our
in,
bad
right
opinions
in, right
in one bo- in one podcast.
God. Thank you again, Patrick, for being here. Thank you for writing into your question, Connor in Toronto. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Patrick,
find me on Twitter
you?
At Patrick Klubik. And I find me on Facebook at P Klubik.
You can find Waypoint on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook, Waypoint Vice, YouTube, Waypoint Vice. We're starting to upload more videos up there, so check that out. Patrick has a stream, Let It Die up there now.
Stream that again
stream.
This week at some point. I'm going to play more Let It Die.
Awesome. Nice. We have our stream of The Division Survival going up this week also. All sorts of stuff. Thank you to Tim, our engineer and producer. Thank you to Boen for letting us use his track Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine. You can go to waypoint.zone/BOEN for more on that. And tune in on Wednesday. There's a special episode with Steve Gaynor. Talk about Mafia 3. Steve Gaynor, who is one of the designers on Gone Home and Tacoma. Talk about Mafia 3. He likes that game. I like that game. We're like, yeah, let's have a talk about that game. So look for that. Thank you, as always, for tuning in, and we will see you in the future. Peace.
Hold up. treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.